This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wyman and Bob, of course, is presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. We only work with the best there, Dave.
Right. We only get the best guests. So.
Oh, we got a big show coming up. John Morosi will join us in a matter of moments. Adam Ray, our buddy Adam Ray, comedian, superstar actor, just a man of every talent out there.
He can do everything.
He really does.
Can
I don't know when he sleeps.
Sing and dance?
He can sing. I don't know if he can dance. I've never seen that, but he can sing. He does it all. But he'll be with us at 3 o'clock, John Clayton at 4. Our player spotlight will feature Damian Lewis today, and then we'll get a visit from a member of that Seattle Mariner rotation, the most consistent starter throughout the entire season without debate. Chris Flexen is going to join us. Looking forward to talking to him. As we approach that deadline for baseball, hopefully the work stoppage, if it happens, will be short and sweet. But who would know better than that than our buddy, our pal, the one who's joining us right now, John Morosi. Our NHL and MLB analyst. Hello, John.
Happy Thanksgiving, my friends. Great to be on the air with you today.
It's always great to be with you. We're gonna let bygones be bygones about the voting
and
move on.
Thank you. I thought that based on the way that last week's conversation went, that you were gonna bring me back on with Across the Field or Carmen, Ohio, or all matter of Ohio State songs as we get ready for Michigan, Ohio State here in Ann Arbor on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Right after we were on, I saw Godfather 2. And I heard the music playing, and then you know how that one did not end well for
that one does
Fredo.
Not end Fredo. Well. Being a proud Italian American, there were any number of routes I could have taken when I heard that song and that reference. I chose none of them. I simply stayed with baseball and just proceeded to defend my entirely justifiable manager of the year ballot. And again, I think the rest of my life, I'm going to at some point in time reference that dead last of the top three, because that was just such a gem. I'm never going to forget that line. I'll reference it with Michigan. So let's say by some miracle Michigan wins on Saturday and then wins the Big Ten championship and then is ranked fourth in the college football playoff. And as Ann Arbor erupts in joy, I'll say no. We're dead last of the top four.
That's exactly
we're dead
right.
last of the top four. Never forget.
That was awesome. All right, and before we get into it, because we had some disagreement, and this is a very passionate topic, but what is the most important dish in the Thanksgiving dinner?
Oh, I mean, this
most
is,
important this is how I'm wording it.
Most important.
What, wouldn't that be the turkey?
Well, traditionally, you've now asked me a question that's very easily a sort of an essay answer from me, but I'll say it this way. Traditionally, yes, it's turkey in most American Thanksgivings, but having grown up in a Polish-Italian family, as I referenced my Italian heritage earlier, my father's mom, first-generation Polish-American, and so we always had kielbasa as part of our Thanksgiving with importantly schan is like and you can look it up. So
if you don't spell it, you eat it.
Exactly.
I can't look it up.
Schan, let me see here. It's Polish. It is like Polish horseradish. Let me make sure I get the correct spelling here, because I don't let's see here. Schan. I'll figure it out by the time this segment is done.
I like that you keep repeating it, though, as if it's going to come to you.
Schan. It's really good. But you have to have... Oh, well, let's see here. It's on... Google Translate is something else that's not exactly correct. But I'll get back to you. At least that was what my grandmother always called it, was schan. I'll tell you like the quickest Morosi travel story ever. 2 years ago, I'm in Warsaw, and my grandmother had always... We would always say Yak Shemash, which is a way of saying hello, but we always said it in our family, and I don't know Polish well enough to know if that's what you're supposed to say when you're actually in Poland. So she didn't tell me that, you know, John, son, you only use that among the family. If you say Yak Shemash, it's like saying to your friend, like buddy, very informal in a family, Yak Shemash. Mm. So I'm in a restaurant in Warsaw with my cousins who still live over there a couple years ago. And I say to the waitress, dzień dobry, yeah, Yak Shemash. And my cousins look at me like, what are you doing? You can't say that to her. You just met her. It should be Yak Shapani Ma if you're going to do it properly. They were like, everybody was totally flabbergasted and like taken aback, almost offended. I'm like, guys, I'm just doing what grandma always told me to do. And on days like Thanksgiving, my late grandmother always said, Janusz Icherschan. So I have to find exactly how you spell that because I have to get this right on the air. Schan.
Well, somebody is texting in. I don't. Maybe they're guessing, but they Chrzan.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Yep.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Schan. There you go. The 425. Nice job by them.
I had an easy answer, and it's just gravy. I mean, to me,
it is.
Gravy's the most important.
Yes, Chrzan. There you go.
So it is gravy. Okay.
Nice job, 425.
There you go. According to thespruceeats.com, it's the sentence begins, Chrzan, made from horseradish root and vinegar. There it is, Chrzan. We all know something new now.
Can you say gravy's the most important dish? It's not really. You're not eating it by itself. It's not
the most important element.
Gravy is
element.
Crucial. Okay. But obviously, as we're talking about this, you could either take the classic American gravy or combine the horseradish root and vinegar, and then you get Chrzan, which I would say superior to the standard gravy. Who needs that? Chrzan.
All right. Now,
Morosi, stop saying Chrzan.
There you go.
With such emphasis and such passion. I love it.
I love his enunciation. Everything, like when you say Berrios.
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 Yeah. You got it.
Hey, well, speaking of baseball, let me transition to this because we saw I'm wondering if we're going to see this more often. We saw this massive deal for Wander Franco.
Yes.
A massive deal for a guy that's played, 70 games? 70
right.
Major League games.
Half a season.
20 years old. He was by far and away their top prospect. He was the top prospect in all baseball. Am I correct on that?
Yes. Yeah. Number one, unquestionably.
A deal that's a 12-year contract that guarantees him, and this is the part I wanted to ask you about. It says, this is the ESPN story, around $185 million. The deal is worth a maximum of 223. What is that? I'm assuming that's an option if a player option
correct.
That gets picked
there's,
up.
There's a team option with some conditions on it for the 12th year. But when you think about that, 11 guaranteed years, team option for the 12th. I mean, we're now well into the next decade. That's almost incomprehensible. The future of when Wander Franco's contract is over, what will the baseball world look like? It's really
well. This will be a bargain, right?
Well, exactly. And I do think. We all understand that a week from tonight, tomorrow, there's the deadline here coming up for MLB with respect to the CBA. And I do think if you've got a deal to work on, if you've got a player that you believe in, and you're not sure what the rules are going to be, if there is a work stoppage, hey, get it done now. And especially with Franco, I'll tell you this, being around him during the playoffs, what a player. And he wants to be great. I really enjoyed it. I had a couple conversations with him. Curious. He reminds me he has some traits that are in common with a Juan Soto in terms of that just incredible talent plus love for the game plus aptitude to get better. I mean, he was having some truly professional at-bats in huge moments at Fenway Park in the playoffs. That's special. And so for me, you do wonder what do contracts look like if a Kelnick becomes the player that the Mariners hope he's going to be, if a Julio Rodriguez becomes the player the Mariners hope he's going to be. It is interesting that there will be some conversations along these lines that would likely dwarf the contracts that were handed out to Evan White, for example. It's just a fundamentally different conversation when you're already at the major league level and performing, which is why, to me, Kelnick is just such an interesting guy to watch play here in 2022 and beyond.
Hey, JP, if you are, you kind of touched on it, but if you're an agent with this deadline looming here, what would be your, what's your sense that you get? Do you think you could create some urgency and maybe get a little bit more money than you might later? Or what would be your advice to a player?
Yeah, I do think, David, it's certainly a possibility. We're already seeing it now with some deals happening here. Steven Matz in the last 24 hours, Eduardo Rodriguez, his deal, the extension for Berrios, others. I mean, there's a lot. Noah Syndergaard, a one-year deal, obviously, for beyond what the QO was. I think especially among the pitchers, we are seeing movement. And John Gray, I had an agent tell me today he might be the next one to go. I do think Kevin Gausman, who the Mariners have been involved in, his name is out there. I would not surprise me at all if he signs in the next week. This is going to be, you know, it's so interesting, as you guys know, NFL free agency, NBA free agency, NHL free agency is quick. It happens fast because there's no salary cap for the most part, or because there is a salary cap there and we don't have one in baseball. And now I think we're almost dealing with a deadline that we rarely have, and all of a sudden things are starting to move, and it's pretty interesting to watch it unfold. So I do think that the deadline is there and is spurring a lot of activity, especially on the pitching front. What I don't know is if any of the big Boras clients will sign, especially among the position players. Seager, Semien, Chris Bryant. He's got three of the premier top five or six position players. I'm a little skeptical if any of those three are going to sign before next week.
What do you see? Make of the numbers I've seen attached to Semien, a guy that the Mariners are obviously interested in, amongst other teams, and a lot of fans are interested in him coming here. He's a guy that's 31 years old. We're not talking a 26, 27
right.
year old. Not that he's finished by any stretch, but a 31 year old. And I saw that Boras is expecting north of $200 million for him. Do you look at that and say, well, that makes sense? Or is that pie in the sky for a guy? I mean, obviously coming off a brilliant season, but
sure.
Is that who he is moving forward? Well, or it seems like it's a bit of a risk for a guy that age, and you look at his history in the league, hasn't always been, obviously, what he produced last year.
Right. He's a really interesting case because on the field, off the field, tremendous value. He can play an up-the-middle position, so he can be a shortstop. He proved he could play second base, which is obviously where the Mariners would want him. I look at him as being somewhat similar to George Springer. Springer, up-the-middle player, center field, goes to the Blue Jays, and his contract, about the same age that Marcus is right now, was 6 for $150. And so that means it's exactly at that $25 million a year range. I think that's what Marcus is probably going to try to hit. And then the question becomes, can you go 25 times 7? That would get you to 175, which is obviously way more than the one-year deal he took to go to Toronto. So, I mean, I think that's – if he gets – I would have a hard time if I was Marcus Semien, if somebody offered me 7 years for 175 – I would have a hard time saying that's way too low. I think ultimately, if you're at 7 and 175 for Semien, I believe you're going to be part of the final conversation. If he gets 8, I would be a little surprised, not totally flabbergasted, but I do think if you're at 7 years with him for a middle of the infield player, you almost never see middle of the diamond infielders giving you good value at the age of 37, 38. This is like Derek Jeter type later career Jeter years.
Yeah.
I think that for Semien, if you go 7 for $175, if you're comfortable at that level, I think you're going to be, if you don't get the player, you're going to be at least one of the finalists if you're at that level.
JP, we have Chris Flexen on at 5:45 today, and
nice.
He, like Bob said, just by far the most solid. But as far as his performance there, I mean, I always worry about pitchers year to year. We talk about bullpen from year to year. Sometimes you have the same guys, but it gets worse. But what you saw out of Chris Flexen last year, do you think that this is him? This is sustainable. This is the pitcher that he is.
I think it is because he's someone that really doesn't walk a lot of guys. Obviously, he's done a very good job of controlling his strikeouts to walk ratio to get it to a very good spot. He's someone that does to a degree because he doesn't strike out a ton of guys. He does depend on his defense to an extent, but he's lucky that the Mariners are a very good defensive club. So I think from that perspective, all of it is sustainable. What I'd be curious to learn about from him, and I think it's important, you look at what he did pitching in Korea in 2020 for Doosan, he still pitched 116 innings there. And so he had something that was much closer to a full season than a lot of the MLB pitchers had in 2020 because Korea played longer. They began their year earlier than we were able to here in the States. So I wonder with him getting to a career high in innings at 179 and two-thirds this year, I'd be curious to know how he has sort of made sense of the varying roles here, where in 2019 he was mostly a AAA starter, then he signs to go to Korea. The pandemic obviously affected everything. I would just be curious to hear from him what his offseason is like now and how he's responding to a career high in innings by a pretty good margin. You look back to the minor leagues, I think the only other time he was over 100 innings was back in 2016 in St. Louis. So career high in innings – What is it about the Mariners and the way they manage their workloads that made it work for him? And how does he make sure that going forward, it's a similar level of success coming off a career high in innings? I think it's, but you're right. In terms of the pitch making, I think he is someone that doesn't overwhelm you, but has excellent command, moves the ball around really well, really well developed secondary stuff, breaking ball, changeup. I think he just had a tremendous year for the Mariners in 2021.
You know, a guy that we just saw sign a 3-year, $24 million deal was reliever Kendall Graveman, who was obviously here with the Mariners, and he was lights out with the Mariners, and nobody wanted to see him leave. But, you know, I was telling Dave, you know, and we've talked about this, bullpen is one of the most, you know, confounding things in baseball to me, because all of the same guys can dominate one year. You bring back that same cast, and all of a sudden everybody's lighting them up for whatever reason. It's really inconsistent. So I'm always sort of loath to really invest in bullpen arms. 3 years, $24 million.
Yeah.
I like Graveman. I would have loved if he would have come back to Seattle. I'm not mad that the Mariners weren't in on that. That seems extreme for a guy that's not the pitcher. Who he was this year, John, is not who he's been through his career if you look at his numbers. So you're sort of betting that this is who he is moving forward at 31 years old. What'd you think of that signing?
No, it's a great call. And the White Sox are a sort of a unique team. I mean, they already have Hendricks there. The plan is to trade Kimbrel. You almost never see clubs over-leveraging late-inning relievers and having three of them on your roster at one time, much less maybe two, but it's a very rare approach given where they're at right now. And I think that it really does affirm, as much criticism as the Mariners took when they traded Graveman, if you weren't going to afford him for the long term and you weren't going to bring him back and you felt like you had some internal guys that could have those roles, when you look at how well Sadler pitched, of course, and Steckenrider was able to close games and Seawald was as well, they were able to make it work. And I think that you have to give him some credit, Jerry DePoto, some credit for making the deal when they did, because all of a sudden Toro's a pretty big part of the club in 2022 and beyond, and gives them flexibility to pursue someone like Semien and then swing Toro around to play third base. It's a good trade. And I think that this is where, and I love what MLB and the union did with respect to moving the tender deadline up a couple days, so that way they can do some business before December 1st. What that means is that for the arbitration eligible players, you have to tender them contracts by basically early next week to give everybody time to sign a contract before a potential work stoppage. And what that does is, if you really trust your pro scouts, and that's where guys like Steckenrider, Seawald, Sadler, they all came from other places. And the Mariners had to really get some good scouting information, good analytics, and make the right choices where they bought low on a bunch of stocks, so to speak, and then watched them grow and improve. And I think you have two choices. You either pay the going rate for Kendall Graveman, or you do a really good job on R&D and scouting to make sure that you make the right recommendations on guys like Steckenrider. And now you look at him, and he may well be the Mariners' closer in 2022.
John, always great stuff. We look forward to it every single week. Have a really awesome, awesome Thanksgiving, and enjoy the Schkan.
Schkan. Schkan.
One more time. One more time.
Schkan. Schkan. Schkan with the CH. And we had a little Polish lesson today. We talked about the Godfather. I love it. I wish you all a great Apple Cup on Saturday. I know certainly Washington State's got a lot to play for. My brother-in-law, the devoted Huskies fan, I know there's a little changeover quarterback there potentially. Lots going on there. I'll be watching that game. We got Michigan, Ohio State, the Kraken, and Carolina tonight, a rivalry game there with Ron Francis and his old team. I love sports. I love sports, guys. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too, John. We'll make sure we get to hockey next time.
You bet. Can't wait. All the best, guys. Thank you.
And best of luck to Michigan. There you go. There you go. Pulling for the underdog in that one. All right. We love talking to John. Appreciate him for joining us on the program, as he does every single week. And those conversations with our NHL insider, John Morosi, are presented by the one, the only Stanford's Restaurants. Let's take two.
The NFL released the first round of Pro Bowl voting today. Quandre Diggs, Michael Dixon, and Nick Ballore lead their position groups in the NFC. Fan voting will run through December 16th, and the teams will be announced on the 20th.
Matt Nelson.
Who is that? What voice is that?
Oh, Matt. Look at that. Matt, what do you think about the Pro Bowl voting?
I think that it happened today. I think that Quandre Diggs, Michael Dixon, and Nick Ballore lead their position groups in the NFC.
Matt is really excited to be here. He's like, listen, I don't often get a chance to talk and listen to sports conversation for 4 hours. I can't wait.
Can't wait.
Yeah, he was very excited about the whole prospect of talking sports.
It's a good number of guys on a 3-7 team.
Yeah,
you know, Nick Ballard.
But does it speak
it.
To the team? I mean, it's your.
Well, you get a punter.
Yeah.
And a cover guy.
A special teams guy, essentially.
I'm happy for Quandre. He really did, and
we've been singing his praises all year, even when the defense was playing really well, was last game. They didn't play that well. But he's been the most consistent element of that defense through 10 games.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I don't know if they're going to do it have a game this year. I feel like that game's going to go by the wayside here.
That'd be just fine.
Yeah, I like the skills competition thing.
Yeah, do more of that. Get creative with the skills. Get them out there. Give them a good, you know, fun place to be if it's in Hawaii, whatever. The honor of being a Pro Bowler is still a cool thing. The game stinks.
Well, let's face it. There's no way that if I'm making $35 million or even if I'm making 12 or 15, I'm going to go play in this exhibition game that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get hurt, and like we've always talked about, it's the all-star game that's the worst as far as, like, you can't replicate what a real NFL game is like at the Pro Bowl.
Another potential pitcher is off the board for the Mariners. Steven Matz reached a four-year, $44 million deal with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, we'll see if there's going to be a frenzy of activity before the impending work stoppage. You know, it's interesting to hear Morosi's thoughts on that. You know, what he'd do if he were an agent. Howard GM, you know, it's going to be a different view depending on if you're the agent versus the GM of a team. It's the poker game. Everybody's got their poker face on.
Yeah.
And you got people like Scott Boras out there. You know, I don't know if you saw his little press conference out at the GM meetings the other day outdoors. And he's, boy, you talk about word salad. Holy moly. I was sitting there, wait a minute. What is he talking about now? He's got a handful of just top shelf clients. He's going to make another truckload of money, and he's making certain of that. He's letting people know that nobody's getting off cheap. Nobody's getting deals. There are no hometown discounts with his clients.
Right.
He's going to squeeze every last dime out of whoever signs his clients.
Well, and I think, and we talked about this the other day, these numbers, first of all, I think they're going to sound, this four-year, $44 million deal might look like chicken scratch here coming up pretty soon, but the other thing is, it just indicates the health of Major League Baseball. Really, I think just because we were so into the Mariners, I've never been more into a team, a baseball team, than that team last year.
Yeah.
But it's good to see that the MLB has survived the pandemic and it's healthy as can be.
Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife. Prostate coming up. Two star players are out for the Seahawks opponent. But after last week, is that a reason to be concerned? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, our buddy, our pal, comedian extraordinaire Adam Ray will join us on the program.
It's too bad we couldn't get him in here. I still haven't met Adam Ray. In person. You haven't met J.P. Morosi in person.
No. Met him over the FaceTime thing I did when I was on my Disneyland ride at home. But, you'll meet Adam at some point once restrictions get loosened up. But, yeah, thought we'd be able to get him in the building, but we can't, so he's going to join us on the phone. He is in town, though. Maybe we could just have him stand outside the window on the street and wave to you.
Yeah.
But he'll join us at 3 o'clock. Meanwhile, we're talking about the matchup coming up this weekend with the Washington football team. And, you know, it's funny. I'm looking at the numbers last night, Dave, and I'm looking at their team offensively. Just going, all right, let me see what Heinicke's doing out there. Because every time I watch the highlight shows, he's fist pumping and he's making plays. And yeah, overall, he's not having a great year. He's not lighting it up, but I think he's just kind of a gritty, gutsy guy. You look at their numbers, they don't really do anything offensively well. They do run the ball well. That's it. They don't pass the ball well. They don't score a bunch of points. They give up. They don't put up a bunch of total yards, passing yards. But the funny thing is, as much as I look at their offense and say, they don't really do anything great, except they do run it well. Everything they do that's not great is better than what the Seahawks do offensively. Like, so if they're ranked 20th in the pass, the Seahawks are 24th or whatever, and you know, point scored. Maybe the, you know, Washington, I don't know, they're down towards the bottom, but the Seahawks are further down toward the bottom.
Yeah, well, defense total yards, they're 24th, Seahawks 31st.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, except for, as you pointed out, the run.
Yeah, Washington is good with the run on both sides. They're good at defending the run, and they're good at running the ball. Yep. That's really the only thing, if you're just looking at offensive and defensive stats and just trying to measure this team based on stats and not really watching their games every week, you're going, they don't really do anything well other than when it comes to the run game on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, and it's funny, going into that game last year, which is weird that they're going all the way to Washington twice, you know, in 2 years, but that was the same thing. And that's kind of a Ron Rivera thing, because remember, they have a couple of what Mark Schlereth would call war daddies.
Football playing Jesse's
as well, yes, at defensive tackle. Deron Payne and I think the other kid's name is Allen. They're both first rounders, both from Alabama. But they also have Montez Sweat and they have Chase Young, but those guys are both hurt.
Both out.
Yeah, but those guys on the inside, and then, you know, their offensive line, Jake was just on the huddle, was raving about their O-line. So, yeah, you look at their 10th as far as running the ball, and then they are 6th as far as stopping the run. They only give up 98 yards.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a Ron Rivera thing, and I don't disagree with that. Building your – I mean, if you spend your first rounders on, you know, I think it was 3 years in a row, it went 17, 18, well, I guess it went 17, 18, 20, when they, you know, they got the two big war daddies out of Alabama, mm-hmm. 17 and 18, and then 2020 they get Chase Young. And they also have Montez Sweat. So, yeah, that's just, he's dedicated to that. And same thing on the other side of the ball. So it doesn't surprise me too much. But, you know, going in there, I remember last year thinking, okay, they had just come off of upsetting the Steelers. Remember the Steelers were 11-0,
mm-hmm.
10-0, something like that, and they were the first team to, you know, to go in there and beat them. And I was thinking, I didn't think they'd win last year. I thought they were going to go in. I think it's going to be a similar type of deal where it's going to be tough.
Well, and that's what I was looking for, a reason to believe, Dave.
Yeah.
I was looking at the numbers like, let me find something that tells me this is where they can start to turn things around a bit, or just give us something to feel good about for a week. And I'm looking at it going, yeah, the Washington, again, not great at really anything other than running the ball and stopping the run. But is that enough to make you feel like, all right, Seahawks got this one? And the answer is no. No, it, for me anyway, it didn't make me feel like, well, this is a team you should beat. In fact, we had somebody text in yesterday, and you guys can text in throughout the show, 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Somebody sent in a text yesterday saying, hey, I'm talking to my buddy back in Washington, and they're talking out there like there's no excuse to lose to the Seahawks team.
Yeah.
Like, that's the conversation.
Isn't that crazy?
Well,
you were talking yesterday about the trap game now.
Yeah, Seahawks are viewed as the trap game. I mean, it's just the picture of this team outside of Seattle. I mean, it's not great here, certainly, but just how they're viewed outside of here as a team you should. There's no excuse to lose to them. They're a trap game. I mean, this is uncharted territory.
It's weird, too, to me, because wouldn't you look at the Seahawks, and I guess we're just too close to it, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe people don't know who Quandre Diggs is. Everybody knows who Jamal Adams is. Everybody knows who Bobby Wagner is. I think everybody knows who Carlos Dunlap is.
Probably. If they're a football fan, yeah. If they're a casual fan, maybe not.
Yeah.
But the people that are listening to us, they know Carlos Dunlap before he got here.
Yeah, and by the way, we had the other day, DK Metcalf was on a commercial we were watching in here. It was Hulu. So,
okay.
I mean, I think most people in the country know who he is.
Saw the Buda Baker highlight over and over and over.
And probably all saw the 100-meter, you know, trial that he ran. What did he get, 15th out of 17?
He beat two guys
that do that for a living.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I'll just give it a try. So, I mean, I think everybody knows him. Tyler Lockett might be the one where people are like, I've not really heard of him. I was told you I was talking to Dan Dockich in week one in Indianapolis. He's like, so how about Tyler Lockett? I'm looking at his numbers. You know, what kind of guy is he? And I'm like, wow. So, but everybody knows Russ, you know, and also you look at like Dwayne Brown.
Well, they know Wagner and they know.
Yeah, I mentioned all those guys on the defense. I mean, I feel like you would look at it and go, this is a team that has good players, and you better go and play well in order to beat this team because they could explode at any moment. That's what I would think, but like you're saying,
the dreaded trap game. Yeah. That's what it sounds like.
but they're thinking, yeah, this is there's no excuse to not beat these guys.
By the way, are you a believer in that? I can't remember your position. I just don't believe in a trap game.
No. It's ridiculous.
Because Clayton was like, yeah, yes, I do.
Well, and here's the thing, because basically what you're saying, and this is kind of like how I guess football players think differently. Like what Schlereth yesterday is like, I don't care what a guy was drafted, what round. Mm-hmm. Once you get in the NFL, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, and to me, I think that's also a football player mentality. It's like every week is important. And by the way, if you are going up against a team, I don't remember how many times I knew what their record was. Right. I knew what I saw on film. Like, I didn't even look at this stuff. I mean, we get this every week where it's like, okay, they're 19th in total offense, they're 10th in rush offense. I'm not looking at how it's ranked. I'm looking at what I see on film.
And you said by the end of the week, were convinced everybody was just, wow, these guys are good.
We're going to lose. Yeah. So, I mean, I wasn't thinking that way. But, I mean, you just like, hey, these guys are good enough to beat us. Every single team. Like I said, Tony Mandarich was the only guy. I saw
one player in your entire career that you looked at and said, that guy stinks.
He stinks and he does not belong in the league. Everybody else, it's like, okay, you see a guy get beat every once in a while, but you can also see all the good things that he does. So, you know, and so that's why I don't believe in the trap game because everybody, and then if you don't get it as far as, you know, taking the team seriously or whatever, the coaches will make sure you do. I mean, by the time you're done, they have convinced you that, you know, this is going to be an incredibly difficult game. So, yeah, that's why I don't believe in the trap game.
Well, and I think this will be. I mean, listen, the Seahawks could easily go out there and turn it on all of a sudden. I mean, they have the talent, as we've talked about on the roster. Maybe they find it this week. I don't know. But if again, asking the same question we do every single week, if somebody says, you've got to go bet your money, $100 of your own money, not money line or anything, just straight up who's going to win the game, I'd probably pick Washington. The Seahawks haven't given me a reason to believe that they're better than this team. They haven't given me a reason to believe that they're going to go out and find it on the road right now.
How amazing is that you just said that when you're betting your money on Taylor Heinicke versus Russell Wilson?
I know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you. I think it's going to be a difficult game for him. And I found out today the game is actually on Monday because I told Rabel when we had him on the huddle, I'm like, hey, all right, I'll see you on Sunday. And he's like, well, I'm going to be there Monday. I'm not sure where you're.
Well, you're excited. You're getting there a day early.
Really want it, yeah. But, yeah, we'll have that day off, and we'll be at the Monday night game here in Seattle. But, yeah, it's just it's just kind of the way it's going this year. And Taylor Heinicke, we talked to a guy, John Keim, from ESPN, who covers the Washington football team, and he said, you know, one of the things about him, Heinicke, is he's got some swagger, you know, and if you let him, the other thing he said was, you know, him getting out of the pocket, and you can see it in the numbers, 275 yards, he has a 6-yard average.
Yep.
This kid can run, and he's got a touchdown. So, you know, if you let him get going and get, you know, into some kind of a groove, that you're going to be in trouble. You could lose this game.
All right, coming up, we touched on this with John Morosi, but the Mariners do have a direct path to Marcus Semien, but it comes at a very steep cost. We'll talk about how much it'll take to bring him in here. Well, that's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, our buddy comedian Adam Ray will join us, get everybody in the mood for the holidays, provide a few chuckles for everybody. I think he might have a new impression he's working on. He's not really an impressionist. He's not like Craig Gass, who comes on and does, you know, Christopher Walken and Al Pacino and Sam Kinison and all those, but Adam's got a few, and he's got one that I think people are familiar with. We'll see if he'll do it.
I know. In
person would be so. Over the phone is rough.
He's like triple vaccinated and
more
everything.
Vaccinated than I am, and anybody else in the building probably. But we got the barrier here. We got this. Yeah, we're fine.
That'll protect everybody.
this is all I need. Yeah. We're good. But he'll be with us on the phone. So that's coming up at the top of the hour. I sent you guys an article last night. And we touched on this with John Morosi. The most prominent name we've heard the Mariners attached to in terms of, you know, somebody they'd either signed as a free agent or tried to trade for, what have you, has been Marcus Semien. A, he's coming off an MVP type of year. He didn't win the award, but he was amongst the finalists. A tremendous year, best year of his career. And he addresses a spot that is open on this team, second base. He's a shortstop, but he played second base last year, can play second base. The two negatives to him, I would say, in looking at what he may make, is the amount of money that is projected to be paid to him. The article I sent you guys had it north of $200 million. He's 31 years old, so we're not talking about, you know, if you sign him to a 7 or 8 year deal, he's going to be close to 40 years old when it's done, and the idea that he's going to still be even close to this level of production, which, by the way, he hasn't been close to this level of production previously. I mean, he's had decent years, but this kind of year is a breakout year for him. Is this you're betting that this is who he's going to be moving forward?
That's funny. I remember the conversation with Jerry DePoto where somebody mentioned about him being a slow starter, and he was like, "Well, I wouldn't say he's a slow starter. It just took him a while to get going."
What's the difference?
I guess
it's implying that he was no good before, and he certainly had good years.
Yeah,
but I mean, this is the outlier. If you look at his career numbers, this is truly the outlier. And again, year where he's a finalist for the MVP, 31 years old. I mean, he had 45 home runs. That's a career high. 102 RBI. That's a career high. On base percentage was not a career high. Or average. But, yeah, in terms of his overall production, it was the best year of his career.
Yeah.
And he played all 162.
Right. And as he did a couple of years ago, 2019.
Yeah.
So, and then he played 53 out of the 60 in the pandemic year. So, and 159 before that. So, again, that's something that we look for. He's going to be there. He's going to be available.
Yeah, durable.
Very durable. So.
But how long does that last? Again, if he's...
31.
This is who he is right now. Last time in the article, I think the last time they were looking at or signed a player like that is Robinson Cano.
Yeah.
Signed him to the Mariners. That worked out well because they got the best of Robinson Cano. He had a career year in terms of home runs here. He wasn't
a home run hitter at that time either.
No, hit over 30. What was it? 33 home runs, I think it was. Something like that, or 39. I don't know. It was a career high. And he was a leader while he was here. At the very end, obviously, the getting popped for the PEDs, that took him out of any positive conversations, but the ability to unload him to the New York Mets was just masterful. So you got out of that before it got too bad.
Right.
But that's you run such a big risk when you're talking about a guy like that, and I don't know if he's going to get – if he wants an 8-year deal, a 7-year deal, does he want a 5-year deal? I don't know. But I don't know if you're the Mariners. You look at an 8-year deal with a guy who's going to be 32 in the upcoming season.
Was he the guy too that was looking to get back to the West Coast? I think.
Yes.
So that
West Coast guy played in Oakland, started with the White Sox, but played the majority of his career in Oakland. But he's from the Bay Area.
Yeah. So there's what, five teams really that you're talking about, unless you want to count like the Diamondbacks. They're fairly close to the West Coast, but yeah. So, but you know, here's the thing: would you rather pay and I know my answer. Would you rather pay a guy who is proven, 31 years old, yes, he's getting older, or some young guy that you throw, like Wander...
Franco.
I was going to say Alonso for some reason.
There's a player, Yonder Alonso.
Yonder, there we go. So, I mean, that guy has... I know he looks good and everything, but you're paying for promise. I feel like in this case, you're paying for results.
Yeah.
And I don't really care about the age that much, at least not for the next 4 years.
Yeah, and you know what? It's not our money. As long as it doesn't prohibit them from adding to the team when they need to add to the team, if they're sitting there going, well, we'd love to go get a, you know, whatever they need. We need another starting pitcher, but we're paying Semien all this money, so we can't do it. As long as it's not getting in the way of you improving your team down the road, I can live with a guy who gets older and who's not as productive because that's the realistic expectation, unless you go the Barry Bonds route and you work with a really good chemist, and then when you get in your late 30s, you hit, you know, 70-plus home runs when you've never hit 50 in your career. But I digress. This is it's easy to look at it and say, well, you know, yeah, it's a lot of money, but A, there's no salary cap in baseball. It's not our money, and there's no salary cap. So you can basically do what you want. Now, there is a luxury tax, and I think that's what they're going to be trying to figure out with this work stoppage, you know, where that number is going to be, you know, and I don't know if the Mariners are going to approach the limit to where they're going to have to pay any sort of luxury tax. I don't know what their their budget is or where that number is going to be. But the only thing holding you back technically is you in your own finances, talking about the owners in the game of baseball. So, yeah, if it takes that much and they feel confident that he's the difference between getting to the postseason, making a run in the postseason and not, then it's going to be worth it.
Yeah.
It's just I saw that price tag and I just went, whoa, $200 million, huh? But then again, not my money.
Yeah.
Not my money. So,
and again, no salary cap.
Yeah. Yeah. So if they can do it and they say, well, you know, we're just going to try to fill in the holes best we can everywhere else because we went over budget here or something like that, then I'm out. But if you can make that move and still say, hey, no, this is all part. We're going top shelf and, you know, in the rotation or the bullpen or wherever else you're going to spend, then go nuts. Let's have a spending spree. Let's have a spending party. I'm in. I'm in on that.
Do you feel sorry for John Stanton at all?
No. No.
He comes into our booth all the time.
Yeah. In that aspect, that makes his life even better. I mean, he's a guy with a lot of cash. He's got a prominent position, and he gets to hang out with us. Why would I feel sorry for him?
That's right.
I envy him. All right. Coming up, you know him. You love him. He's one of the great comedians out there, and he's here just to give you a little holiday chuckle. Adam Ray will join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.